Well, it's about just after 2 o'clock, and I thought we could go ahead and get started. My name is Claudia Ellison with eHealth Initiative. I'm the Director of Programs and Services. And just as a reminder, just so that we don't hear any background noise, could you please mute your line when you're not speaking? And hopefully you'll have lots of questions and lots of opportunities to unmute. I wanted just to take a few minutes to, we've got a fantastic speaker, but I'd first like to kind of set the stage for this advisory council. And talk about, you know, what our goals are, what the ultimate outcome is, and then have our speaker follow up with his presentation. So, in general, eHealth Initiative has several programs, and the idea is to really assemble thought leaders such as yourself to talk about key issues, meet other, you know, network with other thought leaders, come up with ideas, exchange ideas, and really learn from each other. And then we will at some point be creating a resource page and disseminating this information to not only the EHI community, but to other stakeholders as well. And we would really love to have your input. You all are the thought leaders in the industry, and to be able to get advice and information from you is really such a benefit to not only eHealth Initiative and what we're doing for the resource page, but, you know, to the greater community. So we started this particular advisory council. It's part of the EHI 2020 roadmap. And initially we had a data access and use focusing on privacy and security. And we've added this data analytics at the request of our members to really look at this growing role of analytics in healthcare and how it's used. So our charter is really to, at the end, to gather success stories to add to a resource page on the website and develop a white paper to look at these success stories and see what kinds of trends there are. And so we're going to be looking at, you know, what are the roadblocks and hearing from you what your roadblocks are, sharing what other people are doing to overcome these roadblocks, you know, what are some of the successes. We're going to be looking at, and, you know, again, all the uses, insights, examples, and again, it would be terrific if you choose to participate in white paper development. So, just run over that. So last year we did a survey, with Premier Health looking at accountable care organizations. And I think that these next few slides really show the value of data analytics and how important it is to healthcare today. So, you know, in terms of not only claims data, you know, back office information, healthcare, it's just a critical element in today's world of health information technology. In the survey, it looked at, how are these accountable care organizations doing? And this is obviously specific to ACOs. But they're doing fantastic, and maybe a little ways to go. I thought it was interesting that the highest value was in cost savings. And I don't know if anybody else in your particular situation has found that these statistics apply to you, or if you have any, you know, if you have anything that seems a little different. Would anybody like to share what theirs looks like? Okay. So one thing that they found in the ACO survey were the top challenges. You know, accessing data integration, change management, the cost, and obtaining provider commitment, and that's, you know, these were really huge. But there are, you know, there are some other challenges, and we can look at those. You know, there's always competing health IT priorities in terms of cost and where they are in terms of where people and organizations want to be spending their money. You know, and, you know, lack of engagement, always a challenge with, you know, timelines and deadlines. And I'm sure there are others. Again, would anybody like to add to these a list of challenges? And I know that David is going to be talking about some of them himself.
Yeah, this is Dave. One of the challenges that we're finding in the ACO world is just the rapidly changing relationships even within our own group, the assimilation of physician practices so quickly, then tracking metrics becomes very hard because your volumes change, your physician involvement changes. So it's just almost the confusion of where the information is coming from and the asynchrony of that information.
Thanks, David. Anybody else would like to add to that? Because we would like to develop a listing of these challenges. And I'd like to say that, you know, although with this this webinar, we've got a really fantastic speaker, I'd really like to create an opportunity where it's an informal discussion. And, you know, please chime in, whether it's through the chat aspect of the webinar, or if you'd like to chime in by voice. Don't be shy. So, you know, what are these telling us? And this is where your, you know, thought leadership comes in, and this is where it really applies to your particular experiences, how it's impacted the practitioners, the patients. When we're talking about, you know, creating these success stories, we're going to be looking at these strengths and the specific values of where the strengths lie and where the weaknesses lie. And then again, for each of these success stories, we're going to be looking at, we're going to be setting up some questions, and we're going to be, each time we're going to have a webinar, it's going to be someone who's really worked to overcome some of the challenges. We're going to be adding these success stories to our website. If we're not able to garner all the information through the webinar, we'll follow up and do a short interview so that not everybody is surveyed, because I know it's really hard to respond to different survey questions. So we'll do it all by an agreed upon phone call. So we're going to work with our work group members, our, you know, other EHI, other organizations. But if you think of either your own organization, company, or others that you think have a story of innovation, please, please send them our way. We would love to include them on the website. These are some of the criteria that we're going to be looking at. And these slides and the audio will be available on the website. So on that note, I'd really like to, with great pleasure, introduce our speaker today, Dr. David Bensema, who is the current Chief Information Officer and Chief Medical Information Officer for Baptist Health. He's a board-certified internist and has been practicing, has had a private practice in Lexington. He became the Executive Director of Physician Services for Central Baptist Hospital and Medical Director of Baptist Physicians in Lexington. He's also the past president of the Lexington Medical Society and currently serves as the president of the Kentucky Medical Association, as well as the alternate delegate to the House of Delegates of the American Medical Association from Kentucky. So a significant, a really fantastic background. So welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you all today, and things keep changing. I'm now the immediate past president, and I'm now delegate, and I should have updated that on that biography, but I appreciate the chance to present. And as the email noted yesterday, as the notice of the meeting noted, it's data analytics, population health, and the pragmatist. And I titled the actual presentation, A Journey of 1,000 Miles, Our First Steps, because we really are just in the nascency of using data analytics in terms of our clinical efforts and development of and advancing of our ACO efforts, et cetera. So next slide, please. Give you a little bit of idea of where we are. We're across the entire state of Kentucky. We have 7 owned hospitals and 1 managed hospital. The managed hospital is in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. It's a 300-bed facility, county-owned. For any of you who've had the interesting experience of working with county hospitals, it is a different way of doing business since your board meetings are opened and televised. The other hospitals are in the noted towns, and you can see how our primary service and secondary service areas cluster around them. Next slide. Everyone needs their little boring numbers slide, so this is ours. The 7 owned hospitals with 2,100 beds and the managed with 300. We have 18,000 employees, over 200 sites of care, which as a CIO, CMIO is really relevant to me, just the sheer logistics of managing and supporting the geographic disparity. I know other places in Ascension and CHI would probably scoff at my efforts, but 200 sites of care is still a daunting thing to keep up. We do the full spectrum of care, including we have 18 retail clinics within the Walmarts across the state of Kentucky that I started up in 2009 and passed the reins off in 2014 when I took on the CMIO role. We have urgent care practices, of course, physician practices. With our acute care hospitals, we have three LTACs, and we have one SNF. And two psychiatric facilities. So we do run the gamut. We have 470 employed physicians. That's a rapidly moving number. It will probably be closer to about 580 by the end of summer. And 260 advanced practice clinicians, APRNs, and PAs. That number will also advance rapidly closer to 400 by the end of the summer. There are 3,000 clinicians, about 2,100 physicians, 900 advanced practice clinicians on staff at our hospitals across the state. And then we've got home health that goes across borders into Illinois, Indiana, and Tennessee. We have a fully owned health plan, and that becomes very relevant with population health and the data analytics. Currently serving 35,000 covered lives, that should be at about 40,000 again by the end of the summer. We have a new Medicare Shared Savings Plan that just launched in January, and so a rapidly changing environment. Next slide, please. So one of the premises that I have, and it's somewhat stolen from Stephen Covey, but it's start where you are. And so you have to know who you are and where you are when you start this journey of using analytics. And so we made a decision in December 2014 to pursue a population health strategy as a system priority. We had made the decision to move to Epic in May of 2014. And so about 6 months later added the Pop Health effort as we were just starting our Epic journey. We have five distinct instances currently of the McKesson Hospital documentation and ordering systems under a single master agreement. We have another standalone instance of McKesson and an instance of Meditech in our owned hospitals. The managed hospital is also on Meditech. Our ambulatory practices are approximately 50% have been on Allscripts for between 3 and 4 years. 40% have continued to be a mix of seven other EHR products, and 10% were on paper. And this information was relevant until January 19th of 2015, when we began our first rollout of Epic, January 19th of 2016. Next slide. Analytics and decision support has historically been using 12 different products to aggregate and represent data, including HPM, HBI, both McKesson products, Maxis, Allscripts PM, Paragon, another McKesson product, TPA, an old McKesson-affiliated product, the Precision Alternative, and a homegrown Excel-based database tool. Our financials came in from 10 different systems. Our insurance contracting was on a bi-hospital basis. We're each in somewhat different markets, and so the presidents of the hospitals and their teams had done their own negotiations. So for the six insurers who have been active in the state of Kentucky, there would be seven variations for each product offering with an average of seven plans per insurer. Really a very, very complex environment of over 300 contracts for insurers. Next slide. The physician employment group, until the decision to pursue Pop Health was four separate corporations defined by affiliated hospital and region. They operated under separate taxpayer IDs, had separate governing boards, and like the hospitals, acted more like a federation than a system. And five different practice management software products have been in use with a total of nine different confirmations. Next slide. So having begun where we were, you know what our existing state was prior to a decision for Epic. We began the Epic validation sessions in November of 2014. We consolidated the physician practices under a single taxpayer ID and leadership structure, single board, in January of 2015. If any of you are involved in physician employment, you know that that probably was one of the more daunting challenges. We all have very significant resistance to change. And then we developed the first system-wide service line in the fall of 2014. That was our oncology services. And we've added six more service lines to date, including emergency department, hospitalists, neurosciences, cardiology, and obstetrics gynecology. Next slide. So we begin, as every infant does, by crawling, and we use the Epic validation sessions to create an appreciation within our system for a reduction of unnecessary operational and clinical variation. We had 547 subject matter experts from the operational areas of the hospitals and nursing. We had an additional 57 subject matter experts from among our physician population, both employed and affiliated, which gave us a very robust validation process and helped to propel us quickly forward. We created physician reports for diabetes and hypertension management out of Allscripts, and I have a misprint on the slide because it's really not in Allscripts. We pulled the data out and had to create a separate login site for the dashboards because we did not have a way to support it within our Allscripts instance, and recruited physician pilots across the system to work with this and track their diabetes management and their hypertension management using this separate login site. This was really intended just, again, to get them introduced to the beginning concepts, and we'll talk about that thought process on my part, at least, about beginning concepts and evolution. And then we applied for patient-centered medical home status in the majority of our primary care practices. I think we now have 92% of our primary care practices across the state are patient-centered medical homes. Next, please. The toddling stage, we selected an analytics product to complement our Epic capabilities. As you are likely aware, Epic's reporting and analytics capabilities using the Cogito data warehouse and STAR have expanded very rapidly, not unlike other capabilities of the large EHR providers. But there's still some imaging and some other aspects of analytics that are better done outside the system. And for right now, we are doing a pilot with ClickView that has just really begun because we've just gone live with Epic in order to have access to that data. We expanded the physician education regarding population health. That idea of introducing people to concepts, getting things started before you have everything in place, getting the pump primed, so to speak, in terms of having the physicians aware of and interested in population health. So we did didactic sessions, e-learning sessions, and demonstration of dashboards both within our Epic instance in advance of Go Live to show them what the physician dashboards could look like, but also using some QuickView demonstrations as well as some work with our partner, Evolent. And the Baptist Health Medical Group and our Baptist Health Plan partnered with Evolent in January of 2015 Evolent is a, for those who are not acquainted with them, a population health management and leadership company. They come alongside and partner with organizations, bringing both knowledge resources as well as the personnel or human resource of care managers, and set up care management systems as well as starting the risk stratification efforts. Next slide. So we've progressed, and this is about where we are now. We feel like we're starting to walk. Healthy Planet has been demonstrated to our administrative and physician leadership, and they're getting a good look at what Epic can do in terms of pulling in the data both from within the Epic product but also from external resources, as the one slide that Claudia showed earlier demonstrated. 78% of systems have difficulty bringing in information from outside resources. That certainly has been our historic experience. We're hoping to see some reduction of that, both just in the current capabilities of Epic and then some things that will come up in a moment. And then we're using Radar, which is the physician patient care dashboard in Epic that allows our physicians to see at a glance and in real time how many of their patients are under control for their diabetes, what their how many of their patients have hemoglobin A1Cs, above a set level or below a level, and hypertension control, screening examinations, colonoscopy, mammographies for appropriate populations, et cetera. And we have, to date, because we have just rolled out, literally went live in the practices January 19th and again 4 weeks later, 3 weeks later in February with the practices, and then with the first two hospitals on March 5th, we have not started to push Radar to the physicians, meaning showing it to them on a scheduled basis. We made them aware of it in training, and then we've been monitoring, and we're averaging about 1,400 hits on Radar per week from the 200-plus providers, right at 200 to 205 providers that are live on Epic. So that rate, approximately 7 hits per week per provider, has really astonished us. The physicians are hungry for the data. Care management and care team model is in place now in 70% of the primary care practices, utilizing our partners from Evolent for the care management for the most part, though also starting to grow our own team, and expanding the care team with pharmacist involvement, social work, et cetera. And then we've done a gap analysis by our physicians and APRNs and PAs to identify needed additional analytics tools and reports. That just has occurred and is awaiting analysis by our decision support analysts, and we're hoping to gain insight to how do the physicians and the APRNs and PAs want to see the analytics and want to see the data. Is there more that we can give them? And hopefully we'll have a report on that within the next month. Next slide. The goal is ultimately to be running, as every child who ever learned to walk, eventually you want to get there faster. And so we're looking at some of the things that have changed this spring, care quality initiative being introduced at HIMSS with, I believe, 16 initial signees. That's going to increase documentation sharing, facilitate clinical integration network activities, and help us to look across our care areas more effectively and efficiently because of the sharing of the information. Our Baptist Health Plan Medicare Shared Savings Plan launched in January. Our Baptist employees and that group are being risk stratified using Identify, which is Evolent's trademarked risk stratification tool and population health management tool. It does both risk stratification and assignment of care management schema. We're going to want to, we have not done this yet, but our goal, again, as I said, we want to be running, we're not there yet. We want to be correlating the results with Healthy Planet risk level assignment, wherever possible so that we can see how the two systems compare and is our interpretation of data consistent across our system, or do we have to look at different ways to refine and define our data analytics. And then patient-linked registry development, it is already beginning. Our first oncology practice here in Louisville was live March 5th. We had them go live with the hospital because of the complexities of Beacon, the oncology module within Epic. You really wanted them to come up at the same time as their hospital. And even with our Epic rollout only 35% complete at this stage, a patient-linked registry has begun to be developed within the CBC or within the oncology practice here in Louisville, and the physicians are very avid for that because they do see this as a resource that will help them with having greater insight into how they can improve patient care. So the last slide, key takeaways. Successful population health data analytics, one, it takes time to prepare for. As I said, we approved Epic in May of 2014. We made a decision to have population health become a systems priority in December of 2014, and I'm talking to you at the end of March in 2016 and telling you that we're just now walking and still don't have all the pieces in place. We have that gap analysis pending, and we still are trying to get things in place. We have made some missteps, and it's best to get your steps in the right order. You really don't want to be that toddler and keep tripping and falling. It gets more and more painful as I age. And getting the steps in the right order, getting the physicians and the other care providers engaged and aware of population health, aware of analytics, and open to the idea is absolutely critical. If you start thrusting tools in front of them and reports in front of them and say, okay, march to this tune, it's just not going to happen. Benefiting from reduction and variation of systems and operations, absolutely critical. I know I read one of the white papers off the EHI resources, and they talked about pulling in, and yeah, it's great if you can pull it in, but every time you bring from a different data source, there has to be some manipulation of the data, some right-sizing or reconciling of the data, and that introduces or often can introduce artifacts. So reducing variation in systems and operation processes to the greatest extent possible and where it's not absolutely necessary. You know, we always talk about reducing unnecessary clinical variation. There are times when variation is necessary, whether in operations or clinically, and you really want to be open to that. Success is facilitated by enhanced interoperability and sharing. That's why we're excited about care quality and some of the other initiatives and some of the changes that are being supported both at a governmental level and really championed at the AMA level. Steve Stack, who introduced me to EHI, is certainly one of the true champions of interoperability, recognizing that being blind in the ED, he's an board-certified emergency physician still practicing, being blind in the ED because you don't have the external data creates risk, introduces risk for the patient, introduces risk for the provider. And then the next, it requires an audience open to receive the information. One of the best ways to get your physician audience open to receive information is to get them to trust your data before you start having them provide action on that data. In our system, we have a disconnect because of asynchrony of when charges drop and when work RVUs are registered. And so they'll see a slight variation at the end of every month on their work RVUs. That's created some distrust. They're never sure. They never see it fully reconcile. At the end of the year, even, it's very hard to get a full wrap-up. You know, 3 months later, you can show them a wrap-up that shows their work RVUs for the year. That's too late for them to be willing to act on it. They don't like lagging data. So anything a system can do to get real-time, accurate data in the hands of the clinicians is helpful. And then the next one is, my play on words, is more dependent on use of tools than choose of tools. Tools matter, but the skill of the use, the completeness of the use, the adherence to using it as designed. If I try to use a handsaw as a hatchet, it doesn't work very well. And it's really important that we use the tools that we have chosen correctly. And too often, Maxis in our system is a perfect example. Maxis has now caught dozens and dozens and dozens of use instances because nursing directors, nursing managers, finance people found it the only tool they had at a time. And even though it wasn't optimal, it was something they could use to create a database. And now we're stuck with all these pieces that people don't want to give up. So using a tool as designed is critical. And then finally, this truly is a marathon, not a sprint. We are just walking, looking forward to running. But even when we run, we know we're going to slog for a while. So I think population health is valuable. I think there's no doubt that we can, with proper analytics, move it forward more quickly. But being a pragmatist, I know that the people and process components are most critical, and then you've got to get the infrastructure right so that you don't get in the way of the care providers and you don't impede their ability to provide that care. So with that, I will stop, and hopefully we'll have some discussion.
Thank you so much. That was really, really interesting, and what an enormous and amazing accomplishment that you've had in your crawling to walking and almost sprinting. I had some questions, but I'd really like to open it up to the participants on this call to see what questions you have. Don't be shy. And I'd also like to introduce Jay McCutcheon, who's on the call, and Jay is going to be part of this data analytics leadership. So, Jay, I know that you had some comments.
I was just wondering, how have you used the Evolent system on the self? I assume you're self-insured on your self-insured employee population in terms of improving health measures and lowering costs.
Yeah. So again, that part where getting your steps in the right order, we had not intervened with our employee population until the last 8 months. And so Evolent has helped us to identify use groups, utilization rates, and some risk groups. With a population of 18,000 employees, you're bound to have some high utilizers, some folks with multiple morbidities. And we have just started in the last 8 months to identify them, and we have tried to be not fully intrusive with our employees, initially trying to get some wins before we start going after the high utilizers and the really at-risk group. So we've identified populations for smoking cessation, for diabetes control, for in a very general way, providing some opportunities for physical training. We do have a number of fitness centers affiliated. I didn't mention that in the slides. A number of fitness centers, which our employees belong to with a payroll deduction at a significant discount, much cheaper than other sites in town. And so we have been targeting promotion to employees who are found to have hypertension, et cetera, to try to help them move towards a healthier lifestyle and get off medications. That is all in its nascency. We have had some successes within the system. We have had 48 individuals who have quit smoking and sustained that for 6 months now. We have others enrolled in the program. You know, 48 doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a start. It's that crawling. In the hypertension control, we have seen a 34% increase in individuals identified in that group who are now under control, and that's actually a very good statistic. That's a very strong number. So we're using it in that way, but we're really in June of this year, we'll be rolling out a care management program for employees targeting those high-risk folks. But we needed to get those wins and promote those within the system so people started to see it as a positive and as a benefit rather than as a isolating them or prejudicing against them. There is no prejudice in it at all. It's opportunity, but we needed the wins before we tried to introduce it to them.
With your great set of credentials, both inside your system or outside, how do you see the behavioral health risk stratification and sort of assessment tools developing either in your ACO or in your emergency service area? Or in your patient-centered medical home?
In the patient-centered medical home, because we do have behavioral health in some of our markets, we've targeted it in those markets to do a more aggressive risk screening, and so the depression screening and mental health screening efforts have stepped up there, and we have coaches, care coaches who administer the tools, and then those results are available to the physician to physician or APRN or PA to provide additional counseling and direction. So we've just really started that, but only in the markets where we have active mental health facility and personnel available. We're developing relationships with other mental health providers in those communities where we don't have a good mental health support system already within our system, within our hospitals. So we're going to do that more aggressively over the next year. Again, being self-funded on our insurance, we recognize there's not only the awful morbidity of mental health issues and the struggle with that, but then the cost, both in productivity, absenteeism, et cetera. And so it's on the radar. It's already been launched in those two markets where we have the psych facility and an active mental health population, both psychologists and psychiatrists on staff.
Great. Very good. Thank you.
Any questions from the participants?
Yes, I have a question. I'm Dale Mulberg. I work for Orion Health as an architect, and I've been struggling with reading proposed changes in the benchmarking computations used for the shared savings program. I wonder whether you have any comments on these changes in benchmarking, how they impact you, or what your view is about them.
I will confess that the person who, Pat Harrod, and had I thought I should have had Pat Harrod on it, and Pat's our lead for the Medicare Shared Savings Program, and she's, I know, it working actively with the changes. Of what she's doing is she's interacting with our data analytics team under Bernie Porter, and also then with our IT team for making sure that we're interfacing to derive the data. But it, I know it's created a quandary because they were aiming in one direction, then the benchmarking changed, and they're having to write some additional queries to get the data out of the systems. And as I said, you know, we've just launched Epic, so we're still an incredibly complex system with multiple sites to pull it out of. So my guys are scrambling to write some interface at a time that we're still writing for Epic itself.
Do you think that's going to be a common experience from people, you know, the 400 or so ACOs that have joined the program, or is everybody going to be scrambling?
I think because we just launched in January and because we are in the midst of this Epic transition, I think maybe our world is a little more, at least for me, frightening. And maybe it's just because it's about me, and it is, after all about me. but we definitely recognize that we really are struggling with this. I think a system that's fully stabilized on a unified integrated EHR or a very stable, interfaced EHR, ambulatory and hospital talking to each other pretty well, I think those guys are going to have a much easier time. It's probably tweaks instead of abrupt turns for them.
Okay. Thanks. I'm sorry to spring that on you, but it's just been, I've been trying to make
sense
of it.
I would be happy, and I should have put my information on, but anyone can contact me, and I'll put you in touch with the folks who are more expert. I'd love to get you in touch with Pat Heron, and she can tell you a little more granularly what we are doing.
Thank you for that offer.
On the mental health side, you commented on before, surveying and assessment component and the risk component inside Evolent or inside Epic, or is it a separate outside product you use?
It's currently separate outside, and it's unfortunately still actually paper-based screening, and then it's the results are entered in to Allscripts or Epic, depending on where we are in the launch in that market. But the results are coming off of a paper, and then the actual screening tool is scanned in and held as a scanned image.
Thanks. And in your ACO, how much out-of-network physician participation do you have in the primary care area and then in the other non-primary care areas? Are you 10% or 40% out-of-network?
Yeah. It's an early launch, and we have the earliest numbers I saw, and I do sit on the Pop Health Committee, which looks at our ACO. They're about 28%, and depending on the market, in the Lexington market, it's less than 5%. In the Louisville market, it's greater than 30-some percent. So it varies depending on our market, and a lot of that has to do with the nature of the markets. Louisville is a very competitive environment, and you have to accommodate some of that.
In the more competitive markets, you need more out-of-network people typically?
Well, in the more competitive market, there's already other ACOs existing, and so we're having to kind of open up to get the coverage that we need. We're opening up to other physicians just to get an adequate network.
Great insights. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Questions? Doris, I see you're on the line. Would you like to ask a question? Don't be shy. Well, I have a question for you. One of the challenges is staffing. And when you're introducing so many new technologies and so much more information that's being requested, how do you manage that with training the physicians, training the staff, the front office staff? How do you manage that with the goals that you have with this data?
Yeah, that's a huge issue. With our Epic instance alone, again, our first go-lives were in January, and we'll finish up our last two hospitals in January of 2017. So we'll have 13 months of going live, really 15 months of training and go-lives. We'll have held 8,000 some sessions of training. We'll have trained 18,000 people to use the product. Average is 10 hours per user. We have some of our nurses, et cetera, who are 12 and 16 hours. Our procedural specialists who are employed by us have 8 hours for ambulatory and an additional 4 hours for inpatients, so 12 hours. The primary care who are only in ambulatory or the primary care hospitalists who are only inpatient, that's 8 hours. So all of that training, we're basically running a small university. And by doing our go lives in a staggered basis, we're sustaining our training staff throughout the year, which is approximately 80 individuals to support training. About 40 of them are internally developed certified trainers and analysts and content providers. And then the other half are contracted, so they'll be with us through the duration. In the meantime, we're training them to some of the Evolent workflows and trying to also get our analytics folks trained to click. So finding the staffing, the contracted staffing has actually been, we're fortunate. We have a couple of really strong training resources in the Louisville and Lexington areas. So we've contracted with a group called ExecuTrain, who's been very helpful, and she's local, and we've known her for years, and so that helps. But as far as finding staff, we're like everyone else in IT. We're scrambling against a nationwide deficit in capable staff. I'm residing in Louisville right now in terms of my office, even though I live in Lexington. But my office is here in Louisville, and we have UPS, and we have five major healthcare systems or healthcare corporations that are headquartered here. You know, Humana's here and drawing people. Norton's Healthcare has five hospitals in this area. Kentucky One, as part of CHI, is here. As I said, UPS, General Electric, Ford Motor has a huge truck plant. You add all that up, and I've got a lot of folks competing for the same body, so that's the hard part for me is creating a value proposition to them, and it's not always compensation, right? So you create a value proposition that's appealing to keep good people. That's probably my biggest challenge, actually, right now as CIO, just stabilizing the staff.
That is really interesting. Anybody else with some of the same kinds of challenges? I guess I'd like to flip it and see, what is the patient experience? Are they understanding that this is a significant program at Baptist and they're the recipients of a really good clinical care because of this, and do they understand what's happening and engaged with what's happening?
Yeah, we, in our seven hospitals that we own in each of the markets, our hospital is the reader's choice in the local newspapers. So I think the patients have historically perceived Baptist to provide a high-quality experience, and we're very pleased with that. Having practiced in Lexington at a non-Baptist hospital for the first 11 years of my practice, I always joked with my wife that I was a Baptist wannabe. When I came over in 2001, I found my home. My wife had been there for years, always asking me why I wasn't at a better hospital because she was a pathologist practicing at Baptist. But our patients, we have done a very intentional job of letting them know that Epic was coming, that we're making this transition, that it is to provide them with an integrated EHR across their care continuum and a better experience than they've had. One of the great moments for me is because we did, as any of you who've done an EHR launch, we had to convert appointments and registrations. So we had two conversion weekends in anticipation of the hospital going live, and we'd done a conversion weekend before the practices went live. And so our staff became very facile at registering patients because we pulled the staff from the offices, the staff from the hospital in to do these conversions. So when we went live, our registration times actually dropped from our baseline in our previous product. So our patients are having a satisfier there that they're standing in line a shorter time. Our ED in Louisville had 2 out of the 14 days in the first 2 weeks of go live, 2 out of the 14 days, the total time and actually all the measures, whether it be wait time, triage time, time to the doctor, time to disposition, and then aggregate time, all of those measures for 2 out of the 14 days, all were green, meaning all under baseline average. And our volumes were up by about 15% during that time in the EDs because we happened to have a late flu season hitting here in Kentucky like much of the country. So higher volumes and shorter waits for 2 out of 14 days, that's a happy statistic to be able to give to our teams, but our patients didn't see a decrement. We did not decrease our imaging, our OR volumes. We decreased by 15% for the first 5 days and then by 10% for the second 5 business days, and by the third week we were back up to full volumes. Cath lab same decrements, 15% and 10%, and then back to full volume. So I'm not sure our patients would have recognized the delay in care. And quite honestly, in the nursing floors, the staff on Saturday morning of Go Live, they said, oh, it was awful, but by the afternoon it was okay. And then on Sunday it was, oh, this is doable. And by Sunday afternoon they were pretty good. My doctor colleagues are a little different. My surgery colleagues don't want to enter the pre-op orders, et cetera. But we're doing well. But I think telling your patients in advance and investing in training, lesson learned from sites that had gone live on Epic before who had tried to shorten the training time and tried to shorten or shortchange the amount they spent on it, they all came back and spent more money remediating. So we learned from those colleagues who were kind enough to share that with us, and we have invested heavily in our training, and it's paying off.
That is awesome. Well, I'm not sure if anybody else has another question. I have one final question for you. And that is, you went from crawling to walking. What is the next step for you? What is your next goal that you want to reach?
The next goal is the running. And in the running, what we would like is to really go ahead and get better sharing across the systems that we work with, meaning the affiliated physicians, so those who are on Greenway and Athena and others, start ingesting that information as quickly as possible and providing them information. So using some of the Epic Care Link, Epic Everywhere, and Care Quality, those efforts for me as a physician, that's what I want to see. I want to see my colleagues. You know, I as I said, I still live in Lexington where I practiced actively for 16 years. I still have a very small practice of mostly physician colleagues who won't let me quit. But I want to be able to share that information across the system. I mean, interoperability, as I said, Steve Stack's a big proponent. I'm a big proponent. Interoperability, transparent exchange of information. It's the patient's record. It doesn't belong to us. And being able to get that across. And then the other is to very quickly help our Medicare Shared Savings Plan and our own employee health plan find the opportunities to reduce expense so I can reduce premiums, and not me directly, but I can help reduce premiums for our employees and help them have more discretionary income or at least stop the rise. That's been such a difficulty for employees. I put together the primary care and some of the specialty groups over in Lexington and grew from zero to 180 employed physicians and APRNs and PAs in 5 years. And just watching the staff members having to deal with the increasing deduction in their payroll for healthcare. So if I can help in any way find savings there that result in holding that payroll deduction down, I'm all for it.
I don't know when you find time to sleep.
Oh, hello, this is Lynn Patel. I had a quick question, please.
Yes.
And maybe this is part of your strategy. I'm sorry I joined a little late, but in relation to your comments about just improving the cost efficiency for providers, within the Epic launch, will you have a functionality that enables you to do platform or electronic-based chart reviews for quality assurance?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, we have had a I'm glad you asked. We've had a documentation improvement initiative in place for some time, and so we knew about that as we built Epic. And we built queries and reviews so that they can do an electronic review for the quality of the documentation, the completeness of the documentation. But also within Epic, from the physician side, for the benefit of the physicians, there's a thing called Pulse, which is a dashboard that shows the physicians how they're using the product. And so it helps them to see where they're using smart phrases, smart text, order sets, et cetera, and where they can improve, and then we can look at that as well, and we can actually target help to the physicians in need and help them to come up to speed, have a better experience with using the tool. The other piece is that we're, because the labs from LabCorp and our own labs, et cetera, are all coming into the one database automatically now, as opposed to having to intentionally go out and look at things before, they're seeing where labs have been done recently, and we can reduce unnecessary lab testing and radiology testing, and we're looking forward to seeing some decrease in use per patient on those areas.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the participants? Well, Dave, this has been really, really wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and expertise and a great presentation. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for attending.
Thank you. And I appreciate everyone's questions and attention. And again, Claudia, if they reach out to you and need to reach me, just give out my email. Happy to help.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.